Welcome to the sixth and final sermon in our sermon series entitled Practice Makes Powerful. In this sermon series, we will review six spiritual disciplines that strengthen our souls to live well in a challenging world. Today's sermon title, The Power of Generosity, Daily Sharing, Good Attitudes, Time, Knowledge, and Resources. Open your Bible to Luke 6, verses 37 through 38, and let's begin.
We're studying the daily disciplines that make us strong Christians. And this morning I'd like to talk to you about the word, the discipline, the Christian discipline of generosity. But the word generosity, like a lot of other English words, has lost some of the richness of its meaning. The word started out in Latin as generosus, and it was connected to the word genus, that means kin or clan or race. And originally, generosity was thought of like genuses, gentry, genteel, genealogy. Can you hear the common origin? By the 16 and 1700s, it came to mean nobility of spirit. If you were a generous person, you had a noble character. You had a noble disposition toward life. In our world, it means more that you are able to share what you have with others. But I want to make a big point this morning. Giving people stuff doesn't make up for being a jerk. You can't buy being a jerk by giving something somebody generously, church. Generosity is more than just the willingness to give somebody some money. You can't buy nobility of character by forking over $10. Aristotle talked about generosity in his book on ethics. So he wrote a book on ethics called Nicomachean Ethics. And his idea of what is ethical is the thing in the middle. So for example, I like to keep things simple for myself. One piece of pie is a good thing. The whole pie is too much. And no pie is too little. So for Aristotle, if you wanted to be an ethical person, you had to be in the middle. Saying no pie for you, that's not enough. And eating the whole pie is too much. So the ethical thing to do is have yourself a nice, large slice. And if you're a pie eater, you know I'm speaking the truth in love. So in the ethic of generosity, Aristotle said this: generosity is proportionate to who you are and what you have. Sometimes we mistake generosity with the amounts and not with who we are and what we really have. I bet I'm going to shock you when I share with you today what Jesus said about generosity. If I passed out a note card and asked you to write on this note card what Jesus said about generosity, I'll bet most people wouldn't get it right. And now I'm going to test you on it. This is what Jesus said in Luke's Gospel, chapter 6. See if it's what you were expecting. Judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaking together, running over, will it be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. All right. Listen to this. Listen to what Jesus said. Before you get to give, you have to start with stop being so critical of people. Before you get to give, Jesus said, you have to deal with your inclination to judge people too harshly. Listen to what Jesus said. Before you get to give, you got to go through forgive. Three-fourths of generosity is about how we're treating people. One-fourth of generosity is about what we're giving. Do you get this, church? Does that surprise you a little bit? This means, yeah, Doc, I'm a little surprised. Let's work our way through these. In these two verses, there are four commands. So Jesus isn't saying, it would be nice if you consider doing this, but if it doesn't work out for you, it's all right. He's saying, this is what I want. I'm commanding you to do this. This is what you have to do if you're going to live a good Christian life. And the first thing is, stop being so darn critical of other people. The second thing is, stop thinking that your opinion is the only right one and gives you the right to condemn others. The third one is, the world is broken and messed up and you have to learn how to forgive. And finally, not everything I have was given by God to me for me. Some of what God gave me is supposed to flow through my life to others. All right, let's work our way through this. What does Jesus Christ want us to understand? All right, I want to start with, first of all, moral and legal evaluations are necessary. When it says don't judge, it doesn't mean that there aren't some things that aren't wrong. When it says don't condemn, it doesn't mean there aren't some things that should be condemned. Look, you kill somebody, you should be criticized and you should be judged. That's not my opinion. It's one of the big 10, right? The 10 commandments say don't kill people. So if you kill someone, God has already said that's wrong. So we're not talking about legal and moral necessities. When it says don't judge and don't condemn, it's not saying that humanity has to put up with everything. So what is it saying? It's saying in the normal human disagreements of life, we have to question our impulse to be critical. All right? In the normal day-to-day push and shove of life, I have to question my impulse to be critical. Why is it that every idiot in America is in the car in front of me when I'm driving? Maybe that's not the right question. Maybe the question is, hey, Hoss, why are you so critical of those other drivers? Who do you think you are? Ooh. It's really easy for me to criticize that other driver. But it's equally easy when I'm in a rush to cut them off. No? See what Christ is saying? Christ is saying, generosity begins with an attitude that other people are human beings too. And maybe, I need to develop a discipline to be a little less critical of people around me. You who are struggling in your marriages, here, this will give you 100% boost in your marriage. Bite your tongue. Stop criticizing each other. It'll give a lift to your marriage. I've never once criticized my wife and have her say, "You know, Doc, I'm so happy you married me. Where would I be without your critiques?" Huh? She has smiled at me when I praised her. I can't ever remember a day when she was grateful for me being critical. Do you see? You see what Christ is saying? This is not about legal and moral issues. This is about the day-to-day rubbing shoulders of life. Start examining, why am I so critical of other people? Second of all, stop condemning people. God is the ultimate judge of the human soul. When I make myself the judge of other people, I usurp the place of God. Do you get that? When I'm judging someone else because they don't agree with me, or because they're not like me, or because they have different ideas than I do, I'm making myself God. All right. I heard again this week from a friend of mine in this church that some people ostracized another person in their group because they had a different political opinion. Now, I'm telling you, stop that. That's not what the church is about. In the church, we don't condemn people who have a different political opinion than we do. In fact, it's probably healthy to have some people in your lives who don't agree with you and watch the same stupid cable news channel you watch. Can you hear me? I think it's healthy. I want to have friends who have different political ideas than I do. It makes me a better man. I never want to reduce my world down to everybody's got to like the political things I like, and if they don't, they may not even be a Christian. That is evil, and that's exactly what Jesus is talking about right here. Yes, have your political views. God bless you in them. But stop judging other people and condemning them because they don't agree with you. Church. One more time, let me tell you, the people you like aren't as good as you want them to be, and the people you don't like won't wreck America no matter what the news people say. We've had some pretty bad presidents, and guess what? We survived. Church. Now, right now, I want us to make a commitment to the Lord Jesus Christ that we're not going to be judging each other in this divisive political environment because somebody has a different political view than we do. Christ deserves better than that from us. These are our Christian brothers and sisters, whether we agree with each other politically or not. And I want an amen on that. Three. God models forgiveness, and he asks us to be like him and have a forgiving attitude toward other people. So whoever you are who was mean to somebody in this church, I forgive you, but don't do it again. Could I remind you, Christ has already forgiven you for more than you'll ever have to forgive anybody else. I will never have to forgive anybody else for as much as Christ has already forgiven me. Do you believe that? Or have you deceived yourself that you're one of the really, really good ones? Christ doesn't have to forgive you for very much. Talk to the people around you. They might give you some insight. Although they may be listening to the sermon and not want to be too critical. All right. I start checking my impulse to be critical. I start checking my impulse to be to despise people because they're not like me. That gives me a freedom of heart to start forgiving people. And when I'm not critical, when I'm not condemning, and when I'm forgiving, guess what? My heart is naturally more generous. My heart gets more generous with things when I have been more generous with heart. Why are these in this order? Is this order important in the mind of Christ? I think it is. We begin with the self-examination that questions our own self-righteousness. See, when I'm too critical of somebody else, that means I have an overabundance of self-righteousness in me. Aren't I wonderful? Shouldn't you be more like me? That's what criticism sounds like, right? When I begin to do a self-check and say, maybe you would do better to be a little more critical of your own self-righteousness and a little less critical of others. Now something healthy is happening. Church, now something healthy is happening. I'm working on becoming a better person. I'm not saying I'm all right. It's everybody around me who's messed up. You get it? That's where we start. We start with this self-examination that says, what makes me so critical of other people? How can I be a better person? Then we move on, and the step after I say, I'm going to check my criticism of others, the next step is, can I trust God to judge people when I'm questioning my own ability to do that? And I have to say yes. God is the judge of all things. I don't have to be critical and judge. I can trust God to do his holy judging of other hearts. You get it? That naturally leads to, when God judges someone, how does he judge him? He has a forgiving disposition. God's judgment isn't like my judgment. It isn't a judgment of I despise you. I'm gonna get even with you. It is a judgment of you have damaged yourself and the people around you. I want to forgive you and help you get better. Do you see what's happening here? I start with examining myself. Then I lift my eyes up to God and find out that he's trustworthy. And then I see that he has a forgiving spirit. The people you can't stand, Christ died to forgive. He cares about them in a way that is important. Church. Now, I've questioned my own critical spirit. I've put my trust in God's ability to judge. And I've seen that when God judges, he always provides a way of forgiveness. Now, my heart is radically different, and I say, I want to be a partner with God in his generosity in the world. The order matters. When we stop judging people who are different from us and we trust them to God, we forgive more freely the things that annoy us, and it becomes easy to be generous. I want to talk about generosity in three ways. Daily generosity, active generosity, and obedient generosity. If you're in a life group, these would be three things that would be good to talk about in your life group. Daily generosity. Daily generosity sounds something like this. What good is going to come out of me today to enrich the people around me. Spouses, every morning you should say, "Dear God, let something good flow out of my heart today into my spouse. I want to have a generous heart today toward my spouse. I want to be generous in my encouragement and miserly with my criticism. Dear God, help me today to have a generous attitude toward the people I work with." That's daily generosity. I start the day by saying, "Dear God, I want good things to flow from you through my heart into the world today. And I want to have that nobility of spirit." Remember, generous means noble. I want to have a noble heart today. And everyone I touch, I want them to feel something of your divine nobility. Then there's active generosity. Let me tell you the story. Some of you know that cooking for two people is just easier to stop somewhere. Anybody, is there any sympathy in this place? When I had a bunch of kids running around, my wife was a chef. I mean, roast beef, fried chicken. And if you tell her I said this, now we just stop at Dominic's. And so over the years, when you eat at the same place too much, you get to know the people who work there. And several years ago, one of the ladies we know that's worked there for a long time, she was from Europe. And her parents came here when she was very, very little. She stayed and her parents went home, and she hadn't seen them in 20-some years, and she was finally getting a chance to go home. It's hard to get to Europe when you're living on server pay. And she was telling us about this. And when she left the table, I said, we got to help her. So we gave her a significant gift, and she cried. And, you know, about 2 months later, we saw her again. She came rushing on over to our table and said, "You know, when I flew to England, they lost my baggage." And she said, "If it weren't for the money you gave me, I would not have had anything other than one pair of clothes the whole time I was there." All right. I didn't know that she was going to have this big need. But in that moment, I believe with all my heart, God put me there. I heard her story, and in a moment of active generosity, it made a difference in her life. Do you see how that works? Without a generous mentality, I would have heard her say, "I'm going to Europe to see my parents," and I thought, isn't that fine for her? But with active generosity, we have a moment where we can hear God say, "Help this person. You help this person." Church, I'm not criticizing her. I'm not judging her. I'm just saying this is a human being who hasn't seen her mom and dad for 25 years. I am not desperate. I got to help this person. Church. And then there is obedient generosity. Obedient generosity is we do certain things just because Christ said, this is how it works. Let me explain this to you. I don't like paying as much tax as I pay. Do you? If I got to choose how much tax I paid, it would be less. I pay my taxes because I'm a citizen and I obey the law. Does that make sense to you? Over the years, I've known these religious people who thought that they didn't have to pay their taxes. Well, I think they're in jail now. All right. In my relationship to Christ, he says, we're in business together. You keep 90%, you give me 10. That's our business deal. And I am obedient to that. Because he is the Lord of my life, because I'm in life business with him, I tithe. I do it out of pure obedience. Usually, Sharon and I would, when we paid our bills, the first thing we would do is write the check for our tithe. Well, now, of course, Sharon has a telephone, and it's got the Christ Church app on it, and all we do is go to the app. She's got it all set up. Push a little button, and week after week, that's not true. I get paid every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, we have obedient generosity. We just obey Christ in doing this. And I believe it's a healthy part of a Christian life. So there's three kinds of generosity. Daily generosity, it's just a commitment to be a blessing to everybody around us. Then there's active generosity. Sometimes God puts us in unique places at unique moments because he wants us to help somebody. He put us there to help them. They told us their problem because God wanted us to help them. And then there's just obedient generosity. Because I am a child of God, because I'm in business with God, I keep my end of the deal. There is a payoff for living this way. Let's look at the scriptures again. For every one of these, there's a payoff. Stop being so critical, and people will be less critical of you. Stop despising other people with your judgments, and people will despise you less. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given unto you. Do we have the Bible verse printed? Look at the end of forgive and you will be forgiven. Look at the punctuation there. It's a semicolon. All right, go to the next verse. The new sentence doesn't stop to the end of you. So the sentence is, forgive and you will be forgiven, give and it will be given unto you. That's all one sentence. Do you see that? Any grammar teachers here? Come on, we got to have one grammar teacher in this. No? Okay, one. I know some of you are hiding out there. You just don't want to admit it. All right. It's one idea, church. They go together. It's not separated. This is the point I'm trying to make. Not being critical. Not despising people with your judgments. Forgiving and giving. It's all one idea. And there's a payoff for it all. When we stop being critical of people we disagree with, we change the emotional and climate around us, and we teach others to be less critical. All right, how are you going to do this week? I'm giving you an assignment. Being critical comes more easy than being kind. So this week, I want you to think, every day I'm going to say 10 positive things to somebody. I'm going to start resetting what sounds normal. Instead of being naturally critical, on purpose, I'm going to look to say 10 positive things. All right, you got that assignment? I'm going to be less critical by pushing myself to be more encouraging. When I want to criticize, I'm going to find a way to encourage. 2. When we stop condemning people with different opinions, we change the emotional climate around us. We model trusting in God. This is your assignment. Give people the benefit of the doubt. Instead of immediately saying, you're wrong, give them the benefit of the doubt. Instead of immediately arguing with them and trying to prove something to them, just give them the benefit of the doubt. 3. When we stop condemning people with different... 3. When we forgive, we create a climate of forgiveness and others forgive us. We teach each other to be more forgiving by being forgiving. You say, oh, Doc, you don't know the people I live with. All right, you can play your martyr card. I got Jesus on my side. Jesus is the one who says, if you're less critical, you'll be less criticized. If you despise people less, you will be less despised. If you forgive people more, you will be forgiven more. And I kind of trust Jesus more than you. You're a good person, but you, Jesus... How do I practice this? Gossip and forgiveness don't coexist. Do you hear this? If you're gossiping, you're not forgiving. If you're forgiving, you're not gossiping. See, forgiveness means I release it. I don't have to talk bad about this person. I've released it. If I have to talk bad about them, it means I haven't released it and I'm still holding on to it on the inside. All right, this week, when you want to gossip about someone, instead of doing that, have a moment where you say, dear God, teach me to forgive others the way you have forgiven me. Now I'm working on having a generous soul. I'm replacing criticism with encouragement. I'm replacing despising other people with giving them the benefit of the doubt. I am replacing gossip and the need to say mean things about people with forgiveness. Now let's look at the last one. Given it will be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. So it turns out, you don't really give anything away. You create opportunities for God to bless you more. Did you get that? The payoff for a generous life is God is generous with you. The way you measure, it gets measured to you. You decide how much you want to be blessed. Do you get that? You say, oh, Doc, I know some rich people who aren't generous at all. Okay. And where did it get them? Are they really living a blessed life? Are they really living a blessed life? Or are they living a miserable life that they hide behind conspicuous consumption? God gives back to us the virtues we share with others. Church, do you want to understand generosity? Here it is. God is generous. He gives back to us the virtues that we share with others. Generosity is a Christian way of thinking and relating to people around us. And for good or bad, we get back what we give. When I was a young man going to college, in the philosophy department, I read stuff by Emmanuel Levinas. He was a French philosopher, and he was unique because he wasn't a nihilist existentialist. He didn't say existence is nothing but a struggle to survive. He said there is richness in existence. And listen to what he said. He said, generosity is unconditional openness of the heart. Now let's think about that for a minute. Generosity is unconditional openness of the heart. A person is generous when they stop protecting themselves from the world around them and they open their heart. Let's put what Levinas said with what Jesus said. When you are critical of others, you have a closed heart. You're protecting your heart by criticizing them. You get that? It's all about, I can't expose my heart to this person. Look what a terrible person they are. And critical, critical, critical. When I am despising other people, it's because I have a closed heart. You're not like me. You don't think the way I think. I can't trust you. I close my heart. When I can't forgive, I have a closed heart. I simply say, you hurt me, and I'll never, never open my heart to you again. On the other hand, when I have unconditional openness, I say, I don't have to criticize you. I have an open heart toward you. Something of the goodness of God is going to flow through my open heart to you, and things are going to be better. I don't have to criticize you. When I have an unconditional openness of heart, I say, I can't despise you. You might be dearly loved by God. The one thing God might want me to do today is to be kind to you because he loves you so much. And I'm going to let something of the kindness of God flow generously through my open heart. When I have an open heart, I say, God has already forgiven me for more than I have to forgive you. I'm going to let the same forgiveness that Christ gave to me flow through my open heart to you. Church, when I have an unconditional openness of heart, I see the needs of others as sometimes more important than just my temporary desires. Do you hear that? Oh, I can't be generous because I want this. Oh, if I give this away, I can't have that. Do you see what that is? That's a restraint of heart. How do you know you can't? Who told you you couldn't be generous and God still bless you with the desires of your heart? Church? See, here's what I'm saying. You can't, God can't bless you with the desires of your heart if your heart isn't open. Got it? If nothing can flow out, nothing can flow in. Generosity is a Christian attitude. Generosity is a Christian way of thinking about life and relating to people. It is a Christian way of thinking about life and relating to people based on an open heart that receives the grace of God and allows it to flow through us in encouragement, in trusting God to judge all things, in forgiving, and in giving. Plus, it's noble. Remember? It's noble.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information about Christ Church, check us out on the web at christchurchohio.org. If we can be of any help to you, call us at 440-236-8282. Until next time, blessings to you.